Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to the SFLC podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that's dependable-solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That's teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is theirs. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5 The Sports Hub and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Finally, we'd like to thank the UFC South Austin Gym, located at 9900 South Interstate 35 in Austin, Texas. Learn how you can get 3 free classes when you sign up and mention the SFLC podcast. Be sure to call them at 512-292-1900.
SFLC podcast.
All right, fight fans, welcome back to the SFLC podcast here on this Monday morning after a pretty packed weekend of combat sports. Of course, we ended up having UFC Fight Night with Cowboy and Ally Aquinta. We had the Canelo Jacobs boxing match. We also ended up having Bellator with Brent Primus's very impressive first round submission victory and what that means for him in the future. So a lot to talk about. So we're going to jump right into it. I'm ready to go. On the other line, I have Nolan King, who was on the Bellator press conference with me last week as we were kind of previewing Lima versus MVP and Chandler versus Pitbull. A lot of implications around those fights. Nolan, great to have you back on the show.
It's great to be here, man. Thanks for having me on again.
As always. So like I said, we'll jump right into it, but I feel like the best place to start is really where you and I were on that same conference with Bellator, and there were a lot of questions. You know, of course, we knew that Gareth Davies was on the line with us. We know that MMA Junkie was on the line with us, MMA Fighting, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of well-known journalists in combat sports. But my concern with that, and stop me anytime that you might disagree with me, was that a lot of the focus seemed to be on asking both Douglas Lima and MVP if they thought that Rory McDonald's performance was the Rory of old, if Rory's going to continue fighting after his post-fight interview inside the cage. What did you see when you were sitting on that interview?
Yeah, there definitely were a lot of questions seemingly about the future rather than the present. I think that both of those fighters you just talked about were asked multiple questions about Rory McDonald. They were probably asked about the same amount of questions for Rory McDonald as they were about their opponent that was on the other line. So, there was definitely a number of questions that maybe were taking an extra step forward. At the same time, I know everybody on the conference call is trying to get their question in, trying to get their headline. I was the last one to go on that call, and I had a checklist in front of me of like all questions that I was going to ask. And, you know, as time went on, it was like everybody, all the great minds think alike. So, you know, I was crossing off each question as I went, and, you know, there weren't many left for me by the time it got to me. So I understand people, have their certain questions they want. They have their certain answers. They're thinking about articles, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I think that can be a bit tedious on the fighters. It can kind of come across to maybe people that are fans that are listening as media trying to shape a storyline or just repetition or were these people paying attention to questions that were asked earlier? But now that I've been on both sides of the equation, I understand why it happens. I know it's not necessarily ideal, but that's just kind of my take on the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned how great minds think alike. I think I even posted on Facebook when Gareth Davies took the platform. I'm like, all right, so Gareth is asking questions. There goes my line of questioning. So you're absolutely right there. But it did very much seem to focus, and almost to the point where The same question was reshaped in a few different ways. And it was, was this the Rory of old, and will Rory compete? And like you said, on the other side of this welterweight tournament, you have Douglas Lima versus MVP, who are facing off this weekend. And it almost seemed like they would ask the same questions in a different way without taking it to what I considered to be probably one of the final steps of that whole line of questioning. And I'm going to ask that one to you, Nolan, is with Lima versus MVP going on and most people wondering if Rory's going to be able to continue and seemingly also not giving Neiman Gracie much of a chance in that upcoming fight, even though Gracie is not fooled at all by Rory McDonald. You almost feel like you could have asked both Lima and MVP, hey, do you guys think that the winner of this fight's going to turn around and win it all?
Yeah, I you know, that would have been, I think, a more appropriate question. It was kind of, I don't know, man, it was kind of a weird, like I said, it was a bit of a weird questioning in terms of, you know, overstepping Neiman Gracie, too. I think they certainly could. It depends, you know, styles make fights. Neiman Gracie's a guy that Bellator really crafted into the fighter that he is now. They gave him baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. I picked Ed Ruth to beat him, and Neiman Gracie, you know, showed that he was definitely the better fighter that night. You know, Ed had his moments, but the majority of that fight was Neiman Gracie. So he's proven me wrong before. Obviously, he's never fought a guy like Rory McDonald. That's a huge step up for him. I think that with that said, Rory, his last couple performances maybe weren't what people were expecting to see out of him. So I definitely can't count Neiman Gracie out of the equation. Rory McDonald, we know what he brings to the table, but like I said, he's been inconsistent. And then on the other side of the bracket, we have Douglas Lima, MVP. That's a great matchup. I think that, you know, I would say that people are favoring Douglas Lima in this matchup on paper just because of the, you know, the holes that MVP showed, even though he beat Paul Daly. You know, he was taken down, he was held down by a guy that doesn't really have any type of ground credentials. So I'm sure Lima's drooling when he sees that, goes back, watches that tape, sees those openings. So I think that this side of the bracket could certainly win. You know, I would say that Douglas Lima and Rory McDonald, that's probably the matchup that I think most people are expecting to see in the next round. So, yeah, man, it could be either way. I mean, this thing's been fun. It's been open. It's been a bit unpredictable. And I think that that's what draws people to this tournament. And I think Bellator, you know, for in between the Revni era and the Coker, up until about a year and a half ago, the Coker era kind of stayed away from the tournament idea. They'd get asked it all the time. When are we having tournaments, tournaments, tournaments? And just the way that the heavyweight tournament went down, fairly successful. I think that there's a reason that they're continuing to do these tournaments, and it's because people like them, and it has that unpredictability factor. So long story short, kind of beating around the bush here, but I think, yes, certainly a Lima or, you know, if MVP goes out there, somehow gets the job done, I think that they could easily, you know, at minimum put up a competitive fight with Rory or you know, Neiman Gracie, or they could win the whole thing.
So I've had the chance to see Neiman Gracie fight a couple of times, and of course, you know, beyond the eye test, we know that he's a Gracie. We know what he brings to the table. I would not count Gracie out of Rory McDonald at all. I think Neiman Gracie stays true to his fight style. He doesn't go in there and expect to have, you know, this massive showing of dominance. He doesn't go in there with the impression that he's just going to go in and knock his opponent out. He stays true to the ground game. He finds those angles. He finds ways of kind of just draining the life out of you on the ground. And I think that if the last fight that we saw for Rory McDonald is any indication of what he can bring to the table moving forward, Neiman Gracie's going to give him a headache. And I don't know what the betting lines are on this, but I would not be at all opposed to, you know, throwing a little bit of money on Neiman Gracie and seeing what I can walk out with.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a live dog. And like I said, he's never been tested to this extent to a Rory McDonald-type fighter. That doesn't mean that he can't go out there and have a good showing and show that his ceiling is even higher than we thought it was. You know, I'm probably leaning towards Rory McDonald in that fight as of now, but just the unpredictability factor, the fact that he has, you know, we've only seen him really face any sort of a challenge you know, once, maybe twice in his Bellator career so far, where he had a fight that was, you know, not him trucking over some guy and submitting him. So I think that, like you said, he's definitely a live dog, and I'm excited to see where he caps, you know, where his ceiling is, if we even see it in that fight.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we have the main event on that. Michael Chandler taking on Patricio Pitbull, who's moving up a weight class, trying to do what his brother couldn't do in defeating Michael Chandler. And as much as we tried to talk about that fight, it kind of got overstepped, you know, with AJ McKee talking that he would end up taking on Pitbull. We didn't really get a lot out of Michael Chandler, and there are a lot of questions that kind of remain based on the outcome of this fight. You and I were talking after that, and, you know, it seems like Pitbull is of the impression that he's winning, and of course he's going to, because that's the fight mentality. But nobody really asked Michael Chandler, you know, you go out there, you beat Pitbull, what's next for you? Obviously, we ended up seeing that Brent Primus had a very dominant showing this weekend with a first-round submission victory. You know, he holds one win over Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler holds the other. A rubber match could make sense, but nobody really kind of talked about that. So no one, let's just say Chandler does go out and beat Pitbull this weekend. Where does that put him in perhaps having Primus Part 3, or where would you see Chandler's next fight coming?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Brett Primus obviously looking very, you know, good last weekend, fighting on the Bellator, the European series that they have, getting the Gogo Plata win. That's exactly the win that he needed, that's for sure. I think that any time that Bellator, for one of their smaller events, can have a guy, you know, they had three guys that night go viral with really bizarre finishes, things that are unusual. We had up kicks, we had a 720 kick, and then the Gogo Plata by Primus. That's about as big of a statement as Primus could make in that fight, to throw himself back into the picture with Michael Chandler. You know, if Chandler goes out, he gets a win over Patricio Pitbull. The options are somewhat limited for Michael Chandler. You know, we obviously have the same, it seems like that there's the same core set of guys at the top of that division. You know, you've got the Patricio Pitbull, who Chandler already beat. You have Saad Awad, you have, you know, Derek Campos, Gertz. But yeah, it would be interesting. I'm not really sure that I would want to see the Primus fight right away. I'm just not sure what the other options are necessarily for Chandler at this point. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody else from some other different weight class tries to come in and challenge Michael Chandler. Maybe Michael Chandler will even move up in weight. Who knows? I wouldn't do the Primus fight right away. I think that fight, the last one, the sequel, the second fight they had, was one-sided enough where I don't think it warrants an immediate rematch, or I guess it's not immediate, but it doesn't warrant a rematch yet. I think Primus will have to build up a little bit more before we see him inserted into the challenger slot once again.
Yeah, and of course combat sports, and it's been true in boxing for years and years and years, they love their trilogy fights, right? We could go back to Muhammad Ali and his trilogy fights, and you definitely want to see the rubber match. Who would be, you know, victorious? It's an interesting concept enough to look at, but I think you're right. You can't immediately do that. But let's look at the other side of this. You know, Pitbull almost stepped over Michael Chandler because AJ McKee and him were kind of going back and forth at each other on this press conference call. And while it was entertaining, you know, you have to wonder, would a win for AJ McKee over Pat Curran give him the next fight against Pitbull? Because that was what everything was kind of leading to, right? The hype was there in that conference call.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a very smart, calculated move by AJ McKee in that conference call seemed to steal the show almost to a certain extent, where, you know, Chandler, Pitbull obviously have their rivalry. I was expecting a lot of banter between those two, a lot of back and forth. Pitbull clearly the aggressor in that phone call, I felt like, out of everybody. And Chandler, you know, surprisingly enough, shrugged off a lot of the softballs from the media, you know, the questions about Pitbull. You know, he stayed firm, he gave his answers, said he didn't like the guy, responded to anything that Pitbull was saying. You know, he kind of just let things go, said he was focused on the fight, said he didn't want to get too involved in the matchup itself. In the void there that the Chandler was leaving, he went right at Pitbull the first opportunity that he got, and from there, There were numerous exchanges leading up all the way to the end of the phone call, even past the point. I don't know if you went back and listened to it. I actually had hung up on the call after the Bellator guy spoke. And when I went back and listened to the end of the call, even after the Bellator guy said that, you know, the PR guy said, thank you for coming out. This is, you know, next Saturday, tickets are on sale, blah, blah, blah. The lines went dead and McKee says something like, you know, hey, bitch, are you still there? Something like that. And then they started going at it again until the audio actually cut off. So they definitely, you know, McKee definitely stole the show. I think he elevated himself to be in the number one contenders slot there. That division, very deep. Obviously, you know, we got Henry Corrales up there coming off the win over Aaron Pico, a handful of other talented fighters as well. But if AJ McKee beats Pat Curran, I think that out of all the fighters in that division, with the exception of maybe Henry Corrales, who already fought Pitbull, I think he would have to be the shoe-in favorite to fight Patricio Pitbull. I mean, the animosity's there. The build-up's there. This is AJ McKee's first step up in competition to fight a guy that was a former champion, title contender numerous times. I think this is the time. The time will be now. If Pitbull, win or lose, really, if Pitbull beats Chandler, Pitbull loses to Chandler, I think that's the fight that we're going to see as long as AJ McKee goes out there and gets it done against Pat Curran on Saturday night.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, there was no definite indication as to whether Pitbull would stay up in the weight class if he ended up defeating Michael Chandler. However, we don't have to go too far back to find another war that Pitbull ended up having with Emmanuel Sanchez. And if you remember, after that fight, A, it was a phenomenal fight. But more importantly, the overwhelming majority seemed to say, hey, I would have no problem running this fight back. Let's see Emmanuel Sanchez versus Pitbull part two. But, you know,
sure.
People seem to be, I don't want to say short-minded, but with McKee kind of going out and putting his name in the hat in such a strong method, you almost think that the Emmanuel Sanchez's of the world are going to have to wait quite some time now to get their shot at getting this belt.
You know, it's unfortunate when that happens in the sport, but you can't, you know, Bellator can't expect fans to want to see the same matchups over and over again, even if a guy goes out there and earns it again, earns another shot. I mean, once you see it once, you got to wait a little, unless there's some type of controversy, unless it was a very close fight, unless it was a war, or if there's some type of grudge match. I don't see fans, the Bellator giving that to the fans again right away. I think, again, we'll have to wait a little longer for even if Sanchez gets a couple more wins, I think that the cookies have to crumble a certain way in order for a guy to get a rematch, you know, within, say, a year and a half to 2 years of their previous title shot to get another one. So it's unfortunate, like I said, because guys do go out there, they earn it. We've seen in the UFC, Aldo, just, you know, if he wins on Saturday night against Volkanovski, you know, he's in a similar slot where he might have earned the shot, but just the fact that he's already lost before, people have that, I guess it's not really bias, it's, I guess, bias against recency, against old matchups, that we won't see them rematch, I think, for a little while. And then we also, you know, we have the Featherweight Grand Prix coming up in October as well. So, you know, I don't know how many more times Pitbull will be even able to fight before that. You know, he's fighting this weekend. Maybe he'll squeeze in one more before the tournament. But I'm not ruling out the fact that this could be the last time that we see Pitbull before the tournament.
That's a good point. So we'll end up seeing what happens. And you have to think what the shoe-in is for the other seven fighters and, you know, the two alternative fighters that would be there. A lot to kind of discuss as we move forward. But of course, we are waiting until October. But, you know, you did mention it, and we'll kind of wrap a pretty little bow on Bellator. You know, a great win for Primus, you know, putting himself possibly back in that title contention role against Michael Chandler, depending on how that cookie crumbles this weekend. But let's also turn our eyes over to UFC. Obviously, we had Cowboy and Ally Aquinta, and Cowboy went out. He earned that victory in five rounds, and we are exactly back to where we were a few months ago. Is Cowboy going to fight Connor? Is Cowboy going to be able to step up or fight a Khabib? Is Khabib going to fight God, name the athletes that have been thrown into this. You know, I still think that the next fight should absolutely be Tony Ferguson, but we don't know where Tony's head is right now. It's and we get this, and it's almost like the outcomes of this allow you and I to play matchmaker for a day, right? You know, here are all these fighters, and we're Showtime Boxing now. Okay, so who are we going to pin against Cowboy? Is it going to be Conor McGregor? Well, we keep hearing murmurs that, you know, Conor's going to get another title defense against Khabib. And then, of course, we have Tony Ferguson, who through sheer bad luck tore his ACL, and we're waiting to hear when he's going to come back. So what did you take away from that victory for Cowboy and what it means for him moving forward?
Yeah, I thought he looked phenomenal. I mean, Ally Quinta went out there and showed his toughness throughout the fight. But when somebody goes out there and displays a lot of toughness like that, it usually means that they took a pretty solid beating. Cowboy looking really good, in my opinion. I was a little skeptical when I saw him step on the scale on Friday. Looked drained, looked zombie-like. Definitely not the Cowboy that we saw in his last few welterweight fights. But he went out there on Saturday night, a man on a mission. Unlike some of the other big fights where Cowboy's crumbled in the past, I thought he looked very focused in there. He wasn't flustered. Even when he got hit, didn't change up what he was doing. He didn't let Ally Quinta control the pace. He went out there, stuck to his game plan, picked Ally Quinta apart, landed some big shots, went in for kills when he had guys hurt. I think that's one of the strongest mental performances we've seen from Cowboy Cerrone in quite some time. You know, if there was any other guy standing across the cage from him other than Ally Quinta, I'm not sure that his opponent would have been able to take that damage, because that was just incredible. But I think he looked great. And bringing it back to what you were just talking about a minute ago, in terms of like future matchups and where he stands, what he solidified for himself, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said we're back, we have the same problem that we had a few months ago. It's a great problem to have. I mean, we're talking about people are talking constantly about the lightweight division, which matchups are next. You mix and match, you know, Khabib Poirier seems like that's going to be the fight that happens in Abu Dhabi. I would be pretty surprised if that's not the one. But you mix and match any of those, you know, next six or so fighters, and you really can't argue with any of the matchups that you have. The next four or so fighters, you know, you have McGregor, you have Tony Ferguson, you have Justin Gaethje, you have Cowboy Cerrone. I mean, you mix and match any of the potential matches between those four guys, and you really can't complain. I mean, they're all huge fights that will get eyeballs on them. I think Gaethje's becoming a draw, you know, outside, more so than we've seen a guy that doesn't have a belt in quite some time, becoming must-see TV. And Cowboy, we know what he brings to the table. And then Tony, his absence, I think, has made people even more interested in him. You know, what is he going to do from here? Where is he going to go? What's he going to look like? You know, should he have got the title shot? And then you obviously have Conor. So I think the UFC, regardless of which direction they go, they're going to knock it out of the park. Khabib's fighting in Abu Dhabi. That's going to be a huge event for them, no matter who he fights, which, like I said, will probably be Poirier. But, man, I think this is a great problem to have, you know, for the UFC. Sometimes we run into these dilemmas where we don't know who the champion's going to fight because there isn't anybody. Now there's too many people. So I'm loving it. I love 155. I think that's a pretty obvious statement, and I'm excited to see who they match up Cowboy with, as well as all the other fighters that I just listed.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, we heard over the weekend via ESPN that Ali Abdelaziz told reporters that Khabib wants to fight three times within the next 11 months. But, you know, he's looking at trying to get GSP in April. So, you know, the magic number is now down to two. So you've got to wonder, is there going to be that Conor rematch in between then? Are we going to see Tony Ferguson get that fight? Is it going to be Dustin Poirier? So where do you see, you personally, these fights kind of unfolding as we move forward?
It's a good question. You know, I think that we would have Khabib and Poirier. I think that that's a given. From the mix and match with the other fighters, there was interest from the UFC in Cowboy versus Conor. So usually, I can't remember, you know, another time. I guess it does happen from time to time, but you know, the UFC, the reason that the Cowboy-Conor fight fell out was more so, I mean, it seems like what people are saying is that it was more so because Conor didn't want to be the co-main event. That's why the fight didn't happen. So I think that both Conor and Cowboy are on board with that fight in theory if it can happen under the right circumstances. So I wouldn't be surprised if the UFC goes back to the well with that one. But I also think that, a factor that's different now than maybe, say, 3 months ago was Tony Ferguson is back, or appears to be back and ready to go once again, which is something that he wasn't ready to do at the time that this bout was scheduled last. So I wouldn't be surprised if the UFC, you know, if I'm the UFC, I'm doing Conor versus Tony Ferguson. That makes up to Tony Ferguson for not being able to get that title shot in September. He still gets a big fight. He gets a money fight. Arguably, I know probably there's a handful of fighters that would prefer to take the Conor fight over a title fight against Khabib. So I think that that's a good supplement for him not getting the title shot. And I also think that, you know, that leaves you with essentially Cowboy versus Justin Gaethje, which is a phenomenal fight. I don't think anybody will complain about that. And I don't know if you saw today, too, another guy entering the picture. Supposedly, I know we throw this out there left and right over the years, but nothing happens. But Ariel Helwani reporting that Nate Diaz will most likely fight again by the end of this year. So if somebody's not ready to go, Nate's a guy you can insert in there. He doesn't really have to make sense. There's no necessarily a rhyme or reason for a Nate Diaz fight for a top, you know, five opponent. Same time, nobody's going to complain. He can insert himself in there anywhere, and people will be happy.
And I can agree with you on that, Nolan. I think my big thing, and anybody who knows me, I'm a math guy. So we talked about Khabib's manager saying that he wants to fight three times in the next 11 months, capping off with GSP hopefully in April. Well, we also have to look at how many fights do some of these fighters have left in them. We thought Conor has retired a few times now, so we don't know if he's back in this or not. We want to see the Diaz trilogy fight, right? Everybody wants to see that. We want to see if he's going to fight Tony Ferguson. We want to see if he's going to end up getting a rematch against Khabib. We don't know if Conor has three fights in him left. Same thing that you could say about Cowboy Cerrone. Well, now we want to see Cowboy versus Conor. Or maybe we could see, you know, Cowboy versus Gaethje. Well, does Cowboy have it in it? Because look at how he stepped on the scale on Friday. Never mind the performance on Saturday. So you kind of wonder, you can go to the well only so many times until that well is going to run dry. Some of these fighters are going to be like, I'm done. I can't fight anymore.
It's funny because we always think in our heads, like, for example, Khabib's fighting in September, you know, and we say, okay, he's probably going to fight Poirier. Who's he going to fight after that? Oh, he should fight, you know, he should fight Poirier, and then he should fight the winner of, you know, say, Ferguson McGregor or whatever fights they're about to announce or going to announce or we think they're going to announce. But it's really so hard to plan out that far away. Injuries happen. Weird things happen in the sport. You know, we have drug testing. We have, you know, obviously, like, for example, Tony Ferguson, you know, having some mental health issues recently. There's just so many things that you can't account for. It's impossible to play, you know, to predict things two steps ahead in this sport. And for Ali to come out and say that Khabib's going to fight three more times in 11 months, that could be their goal. That could be their plan. But you never know. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, Khabib is limited in the amount of time that he can even fight in a year span because of, you know, his religious beliefs and the holidays and whatnot. So I think that that's fine. That can be their goal. That can be what they're telling people. But we should pump the brakes and you know, not try to plan too much for the future just because this is such an unpredictable, wild sport that it would be, you know, it's fun to talk about and it can be entertaining and you can try to predict the future. But, man, 99 times out of 100, it's hard to predict that far down the line.
Nolan, you know how to kind of, you know, poke at my nerves a little bit because you mentioned all the fun things, the weird things that can happen when you try and schedule fights. And what did you do? You mentioned drug testing. Because guess what I get to do when I hang up with you? Try and call USADA and get some sort of comment about all of these drug testings. I have called, this would be the third week straight that I've tried to call, left a message, and gotten nothing. So thank you and kudos for touching on that. But, you know, you mentioned drug testing. We obviously know what happened with TJ Dillashaw. We hear about these fighters who are getting popped seemingly, you know, once a month. Man, what's going on with USADA? What's going on with the UFC? And, you know, what can we expect moving forward with all these drug testings if we keep finding out that fighters are popping dirty?
Yeah, man, it's been a wild time. I feel like things have really picked up in the last few months. You know, I'm speaking off the cuff here. There's people out there that can tell you a lot more about the ins and outs of USADA, the statistics. I might not be the most qualified person to do that. But from an outsider's perspective, I mean, it seems like that this is still a work in progress. I think that We're seeing, you know, over time, we've seen some changes from USADA, some response in the way things the way things have been conducted. Well, for example, the fact that now fighters, the information, when somebody fails a test or is flagged or whatever you want to call it, the USADA is not going to release that information to the public until things get solved, until, you know, arbitrations reach, whatever the right correct term is for that. So I think there is some response there. The taint and supplement issue is still something that I think is huge. I understand that it's not a perfect science. Science is not necessarily the best word to use here, but it's not perfect. You know, there's going to be times where fighters have tainted supplements. There's also going to be times where, theoretically, if somebody's going to cheat, they'll also lie and say that, hey, my supplement's tainted. I didn't take that. So I know USADA has to tread a thin line when it comes to these issues. They can't. I don't know necessarily what they can really even do about the tainted supplement deal. It's not a consistent issue. It seems like just with drug testing as a whole, there are some almost unavoidable holes and traps in the way that things work. I'm not sure if they're going to continue to gather information, build, and make adjustments and changes to the process that they hold these fighters to submit samples and to get tested. But we'll see what happens from here.
Well, and I won't stay too long on this because, you know, we've gone 30 minutes. It's been great. I don't want to take up too much of your time. But,
no, you're good.
But we look at some of these, and I guess my biggest concern is that we see the tainted supplement that you see, right? And, you know, a fighter gets 6 months or a fighter gets a year. It wasn't too long ago, and this is not me bringing her up in a negative connotation, almost defending her. We remember that Ashley Evan Smith lost a year of her fight career because she tested positive for a diuretic. So diuretics are not allowed, but laxatives are, when they both accomplish the same goal. What is it? Losing that last couple of pounds. As opposed to TJ Dillashaw, who got caught blood doping, and to an alarming enough level that a two-year ban he didn't even raise an eyebrow at. I mean, these are massively different circumstances and outcomes.
Yeah, and I think another inconsistency was the Tom Lawlor case recently. USADA came out, they said that a number of their fighters had reached, arbitration or whatever you want to call it, for 6 month suspensions. And Tom Lawlor had a very similar case not too long ago, and he was handed, I believe it was a multi-year sentence or 2 years, something like that, and it was for essentially the same thing. And they said, well, that was because back then we didn't have the knowledge that we have now. It just seems like that's a very poor reason to give. You know, it's like inconsistencies on the fly. So, yeah, I think that they definitely need to work things out. I'm hoping that this is just, you know, we're still relatively early in the scheme of things with this whole with USADA. I know it's been a few years, but every case is different. You know, people are different. Substances are different. The drug testing procedures for each of these, you know, for the ins and outs and the science behind all of these different supplements is different. So I'm hoping that it's something that gets weaned out over time. But I mean, hey, like some of the stuff has been inexcusable, I think, like the Tom Lawlor thing. And I'm hoping that we can just get more consistency as time goes on. I think that's really all we can ask for if USADA is going to be here to stay, which it seems like it is.
I couldn't agree with you more. And like you said, you got to get that feeling out process done. And I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. I think that my biggest concern moving forward for USADA and the UFC, if you want to start to right the ship, man, drug testing isn't random anymore. You know, like you have to find some way to say, look, we know you're going to fight a few times a year just to basically make or earn a living as a fighter. You're going to have to fight 2, 3, 4 times a year. You should expect, and you will get tested at some point during your fight camp, every fight camp. Like, this is no longer random, right? This is mandatory. You will submit to it and just know that it's coming.
Right. Yeah. I think that it's so bizarre that some of these guys get tested like 6 million times and then other people get tested once. And I agree that the randomness of it seems inconsistent within itself. I don't know exactly, you know, again, I would have to go and do more research on this, but I don't necessarily know how they how random is random? You know, it seems like that a lot of the stars in the UFC are the ones that are getting tested the most. I don't know if that's just a coincidence. Again, I pardon my ignorance, but it seems like it can certainly create some problems in terms of, like you said, guys going through fight camps without getting tested, or guys going through fight camps and getting tested 10 times. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of weird, wacky stuff that I feel like I might leave up to the USADA experts to give you a better answer than I.
Well, hopefully, I get somebody from USADA that touches a nerve on this and actually wants to get back in touch with me. The last question I'll ask about them for you before we kind of move on is, knowing that Jeff Nowitzki and USADA are kind of giving out these, T-shirts for being able to successfully test negative 25 times, but also knowing that USADA isn't testing for everything. That's one thing that we've heard in the past, They're not testing for all supplements that are listed in that 8-9 page report of banned substances. Does it make the 25 consecutive tests seem less legitimate?
That's a good question. I think that it does. I would say that the best answer I could give you is that it does make it less consistent. I think it just puts a little bit of a, it's almost like a way around receiving that, I don't know if you want to call it an award or I don't know what you want to call it. Like the they give out these 25, you've been tested 25 times to the fighters, trying to, celebrate the fact that they've been tested 25 times through USADA. So, and there's ways around that, and it's almost like adding an asterisk to it. So, yeah, I would say that it kind of puts a little bit of a damper on that that 25-time award.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, we know what happened with John Jones, and I have a million-dollar idea that the first time that he tests and there isn't some sort of a picogram of a steroid in his system, I want to make a shirt that, basically celebrates his first time. I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah, that's funny, man. Yeah. You should, when you talk to them later on, if they pick up, suggest it.
Well, the last thing that I'm going to talk with you about, we're going to kind of shift over from Bellator UFC. Obviously, our fight fans out there have a lot to kind of mull over between what you and I have talked about. But it was also Cinco de Mayo weekend. We know it's one of the biggest boxing nights in the calendar year. Canelo Alvarez taking on Daniel Jacobs. Daniel Jacobs, a very game opponent. It goes the distance. There was a lot of concern as to whether the commentators were, seeming to favor Canelo. The fact that neither of these fighters could finish the fight. I had talked to Ray Flores of PBC Boxing, and he had said that he expects this fight to go the distance. But with all of the rounds that we had, all 12 rounds, never mind the fact that all three judges scored it for Canelo, but you almost feel like it was a very anticlimactic ending to that fight.
Yeah, I'm not as big of a boxing diehard as you are. I've definitely come into the sport a little bit more over the last 6 months, 8 months. So I've only, my history of boxing, I always tell people, it's one thing to learn about boxing. It's one thing to, or I guess any sport, any combat sport. It's one thing to learn about the sport, go back, read about the history, learn about it through looking through fighters' records and videos and whatnot. But it's another thing to experience it in live time, to feel the buildup, to feel the circumstances, to understand where a fight falls within a timeline. So for me, I felt like in the last year or so since I've been watching boxing, I felt like there was, a solid amount of buzz about the Canelo Jacobs fight. I mean, it wasn't the biggest fight. It wasn't something that was totally swept under the rug. But yeah, I felt like it didn't necessarily live up to the hype. I think that it was just kind of, it wasn't necessarily bad, it was just kind of lackluster, I guess is what I would say. I'm not sure, why necessarily that was. I don't think it was Canelo's best performance. I think there were certain times where he did look good. I mean, you see the highlight clips of his head movement, of his chin in that fight. But it wasn't necessarily a spectacular, over-the-top performance that's going to get people to, freak out and sign up for 12 more DAZN subscriptions in order to see, more in the future.
That's a good point, and again, it didn't fall on its face. I mean, there were definitely performance highlights that you mentioned with Canelo's chin. There were times where Jacobs had Canelo flustered, moving back and forth between orthodox and southpaw, and Jacobs kind of had Canelo on the ropes a few times, never mind the pun, but Jacobs wasn't able to finish it either. So there was just, you almost expected to see a fighter get knocked down, or and we just didn't see it. It almost seemed like, you know, Jacobs would be on the gas, and then all of a sudden, you know, he'd let off, or, you know, Canelo would somehow have a bad round and then come in the next round and make up for it. But I certainly didn't see all three judges giving the fight to Canelo. On the contrary, I could have seen a couple of them giving it to Jacobs. I actually scored it as a majority draw, and I felt like Jacobs would come out and attack, and then Canelo would come back and take a round, and it was just kind of a, you know, round-by-round stalemate, for lack of a better term. It's like, all right, Jacobs won that round. Next round, Canelo came back a little bit more fiery. He took the round. Now we're, you know, at 19-19 after round two. It was very interesting and very unique to watch these two fighters go after each other.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I enjoyed it. I definitely, you know, I view things in different lights. I view them, you know, what do I think? What's my opinion as a combat sports diehard, as somebody that covers the sport and appreciates the sport, versus, you know, somebody that's more of a casual viewer that DAZN's trying to grab in, that boxing's trying to grab in to, you know, build off of Canelo and the fact that he's fighting. So, I totally agree with you. You know, I thought it was a back and forth in terms of, you know, round by round. Both guys had their moments. I totally could see where you would score that a draw. I scored it slightly for, you know, Canelo. So, well, we'll see what happens from here for both men. I think that, you know, it could certainly have been a worse fight, for no doubt about it. And I think, you know, I'm definitely excited to see Canelo fight again, whenever that would be. I think that DAZN's making it easy for me to be able to watch this now, which is nice. And, yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes from here. As a boxing noob, as somebody coming into the sport now, I think I'm optimistic.
Well, we know that right now, I believe, Lomachenko has the argument for pound, the best boxer in the world. I know Canelo was being thrown in like the top three or the top five. After this performance, I don't think Canelo moves down, but I don't think he moves up. I think he stays exactly where it is. Lomachenko obviously stays number one. And, you know, we'll end up seeing what happens with the other weight classes. You know, of course, you have Errol Spence in that fight, in that round. You could even throw Manny Pacquiao in that. A lot of people are saying Bud Crawford should surpass Lomachenko, but, you know, his fight against Amir Khan, yeah, he won it. He won it with an interesting, you know, TKO, so you can't really pass Lomachenko. But the one thing we can say about all these fights we've seen in boxing over the past, what, month or so, is that Lomachenko was really the only one that went out and just flat-out dominated in his performance. Won it convincingly, won it legally, won, you know, didn't have to have a shot that was below the belt. Right now, Lomachenko has to be pound for pound the best boxer in the world. Yes?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, again, people, and I understand it. You know, I when we watch MMA, I'm translating it to MMA a little bit, and I'm sure it's the same in boxing. When we watch a fight in general, no matter what combat sport, you always want there to be some type of challenge for a champion. You want, you know, John Jones to face a tough test. I mean, that's why we watch. If we thought, you know, if we looked at the odds and we went off of those, like, oh, you know, Thiago Santos is a 4-1 underdog against John Jones or whatever, oh, Jones is going to win, we wouldn't watch. The reason we watch is for champions to be challenged, you know, and to have a good fight. When's somebody going to get up? When is the champion going to lose his belt? What's going to happen next? At the same time, you need those performances where a champion goes out and he dominates and he shows, he or she shows why they're the best in the world in that weight class. They make that statement. You know, especially in boxing, where you've got, you know, so many different boxers competing in so many different organizations, that, you know, you have debates on, you know, who's the best in each weight class, even though they both might have belts. So I think that you need those type of statement fights. And like you said, for Lomachenko to go out there, have a statement fight like that, that solidifies his spot. That's doing something that these other fighters, when they were faced with tough tests, or the tests that were thrown in front of them as being the toughest test, that they couldn't do. So, yes, I think you hit it right on the head right there.
All right. Well, Nolan King, ladies and gentlemen, we always enjoy having you on. I could talk to you about all of the news that's going on. Obviously, what's going on with Brock Lesnar. I could talk with you about Daniel Cormier going up against Stipe Miocic, which should be a fun rematch. But we have all the time in the world for that. On the other hand, you and I do not have all the time in the world. At least, you know, we both have our respected lives outside of this. But Nolan, we always enjoy having you on. We always enjoy you breaking stories and kind of being there and giving us all the news of all those conferences. Where can we find all of your work moving forward? Any other platforms that you've decided to join in the meantime since we've last talked?
Yeah, so right now you can check me out on Flow Combat, still doing my thing with them. Got a bunch of events coming up, streaming live on our exclusive on Flow Combat this month. So definitely check out all that stuff. I'll still be breaking news for them, doing my thing there. I also recently, a couple months ago, joined BJPenn.com. They've got all my contender series coverage, my guide. I map out all the fights that have been announced for contender series, put them on all in one place, link the Tapology records for all the fighters so you guys can check out what to expect this summer there. And then also I'm doing my thing on Tapology still. I'm doing a lot of different work for them. Those guys are great. They've been really good to me, and I'm really excited to see what the future holds for them. And I have a couple other things that I'm hoping to announce in the next few weeks that are in the works. So stay tuned to my Twitter account at MMA_Kings. You can check out all my work there. I post everything there. So yeah, that's pretty much the summary, man. I appreciate you having me on again. It's always good coming on your show, man.
I could have you on anytime that you want to come on. You know that you have a spot here, so it's always great catching up with you. And, that's kind of where we're going to leave it, on behalf of Nolan King, giving us all of the information, breaking down all these fights. And, of course, I'm Ryan Sprague of the SFLC podcast. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Hopefully, if you have any questions, you can hit up Nolan King and myself. We'd love to hear of your feedback from you. But that's going to do it. Take care. Enjoy the week. And we'll see you next week on another episode of the SFLC podcast.